Hello. I know a lot of you, but for those that don't, he already told you, I'm his wife, and I, like he said, I grew up Catholic, and we went to Catholic schools, and we were taught by nuns in their habits and their long robes, and they wrapped us on the tops of our hands with rulers if we did something wrong, and we usually deserved that, so that was okay. But a lot of the beliefs that I grew up with were really hard to accept, even as a kid. They just weren't logical. And so I wanted to share just a couple of those with you because these are things that really made me believe the Bible, which we did not read. We read our catechisms, and we were never encouraged to read the Bible. Most of us didn't even have a Bible. We had a big Bible on our coffee table that we never read. So when I was 8 years old, I had a 9-month-old baby brother that died. His name was Ivan, and he was real special to me because I was sick a lot that year that he was born, and I took care of him. And we were on vacation in Dallas at my grandmother's, and I remember this vividly because it happened so fast. He got sick one night. My mom took him to the hospital, and he was dead within a few days. And it was really hard because he was so little, you know. And the thing that we were taught to believe is that when babies die, they go to a place called limbo, which is kind of a nowhere place that they just have to wait until someone prays them out of it. And I did not understand a God that would make an innocent little baby who'd never done anything wrong go someplace to be alone with no mother and no family and just have to wait for someone else to pray them out. And it was hard to believe in a God like that. And what you're taught is that if you pray enough rosaries, you guys know what a rosary is, to some of you know. It's this chain of beads, and if we prayed enough rosaries, then we could get him out. But you never really knew if he was out or not, so you never knew how many prayers to pray. So you'd kneel down at night and say rosary after rosary and think, well, is it enough? I don't know, maybe not. And the big beads on the rosaries were the Our Fathers. We had that prayer memorized. And the little beads were the Hail Marys. And this is not the football pass for those of you who are football fans. It's a prayer. And we had that memorized too, and I could say it in about 5 seconds, you know. So it got pretty meaningless because you just memorized the words and didn't really pay attention to what they were. But as long as you said them, it was like this lucky charm that could get my baby brother out of limbo. And the place that most people go, and I looked this up on the web just yesterday to see if they still believe this, the place that most people go is called purgatory. And this is not a ski resort for Catholics. This is the place that you have to go to continue to get the rest of your punishment that you deserve for your sins before you go to heaven. So, but the way you get out of purgatory is the same way that babies get out of limbo. People who are still alive have to pray you out of it. And so you kind of have to depend on them to get you out of purgatory. Another thing that we did for Ivan was, and for other dead relatives and friends, is we'd go to the church and they had these little stands with red candles. And you put a dime in a little slot and you could light the candle after you paid your dime and then kneel in front of the statue of Mary or St. Francis or whoever it was and pray to that statue. And that was another way you could maybe get people out of limbo or purgatory. You can't pray anybody out of hell in the Catholic Church. Once they're there, they're there. So I don't know if you still have to pay to light those candles. Maybe it costs more than a dime now. I don't know. I figured I'd go to purgatory. I hoped I'd go to purgatory when I died because I knew I was bad. And the Adventist Church does not have the corner on guilt, believe me. The Catholics are real good at it, too. And we also were taught that dead people can come and see what you're doing and watch you. And so I never could figure that one out because if they were trapped in purgatory waiting for me to pray them out, how come they could come watch me? And so I never did get that one figured out, but I was afraid to ask because I didn't really want to know. So I never saw apparitions or people or anything like that, but we were taught that. And it was kind of creepy to think that, you know, my dead relatives or dead people that I used to know were watching me all the time. And, you know, if a person went to heaven right away, was good enough to go right to heaven, and then we were taught to believe that they were coming back and watching us, I would think to myself, well, is that all they have to do? I don't think I want to go to heaven if that's what they have to do. You know, it didn't sound like very much fun to me. And so then I felt guilty because I didn't want to go to heaven. So, more guilt. So, you know, I really struggled to believe that God loved me and my family because he just seemed so cruel and so uncaring. And life is not easy, no matter how old or young you are. It's not easy. We get lonely, we get discouraged, and, you know, the big assurance we need is a sense of belonging, and I never felt that from our church. There were some unpleasant things about my childhood that made me afraid all the time, and so I always had to have a light on in my room, and often I would sneak into my parents' room, and we weren't allowed in there, so I had to really be sneaky about it, and I'd lay at the foot of their bed and try not to move so I could stay there all night and feel safe. And Satan really used this against me. He would come to me and scare me at night. And I never saw him or heard voices or anything like that, but maybe some of you have experienced this where he just, you know he's there, and he brings in every scary thought of every scary movie you've ever seen or anything that frightened you. He brings it to your mind and just pounds it in there, and the darkness and everything just makes it more vivid. And the thing in particular I remembered as a little girl was the Wizard of Oz witch. You know that music? She scared me. And so he would make me think about her. And this went on for years. And I remember right before I got baptized, it was particularly bad. I couldn't even be in the same room. I mean, in a room by myself. And right before I got baptized, I was living with a guy that I had dated for years and years. That's a whole other story, but I couldn't even be in a room without him because I was so scared, and Satan was just trying so hard to frighten me out of getting baptized. But when I learned about just mentioning the name of Jesus, it worked. And that was a great prize for me to have that, because when I went to live in my own apartment, I was petrified to be by myself. I thought, I'll never survive this. You know, and my sister helped me move, and she knelt down with me in my little two-room apartment and prayed with me. And he tried two times in the 3 years I lived there. Two times he tried to scare me, and he couldn't stay. He had to leave. And that's been a real sense of peace for me. So one of the rites of passage in the Catholic Church is your first communion. You guys have probably all heard about communion. The priest puts the wafer on your tongue. I think sometimes now they let you take it and put it on your own tongue, but the priest always gave it to us. And before you have your first communion, you have to have your first confession. And that means you go into this little booth, and the priest is in a little booth next to you, and there's this little window, and you kneel down on the kneeler, and he opens the box, and you say, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned." Now, I remember my first confession vividly because we had to memorize the Ten Commandments. And this is the Catholic Ten Commandments, where the idol commandment isn't in there. And then the Tenth Commandment, which says, "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, and thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods," they divided that. So number 9 is, don't covet the wife, and 10 is, don't covet the goods. Or maybe it's the other way around. But anyway, those were the ones we memorized, and then we marched off to the Catholic Church when we were ready for our first confession. Single file, no talking. It was a few blocks from our school. And we knelt down and we waited. We knelt down on our kneelers and waited for our turn in the confessional. And this was really confusing to me because there was a little boy in my class. His name was Robert DeRoy. And he had memorized them too, and I heard him. I could hear him in the confessional. And I had, and I was listening to what he was saying, which I probably wasn't supposed to do, but you couldn't help but hear him. And he said, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned," and he proceeded to recite the Ten Commandments. And I thought, something's wrong. Something's wrong with this. He doesn't even get it, and why are we even having to do this? And then it was my turn, and I went in there, and I said, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned," and then I was supposed to tell the priest everything that I had done wrong. Well, I don't know about anybody else in the Catholic Church, but I never told those priests everything I did wrong. You know, there are things in our lives, there are things in our souls and our hearts that are just so wicked that we just don't even feel like we can share them with our best friends or even with our parents. And God knows those things, and He loves us anyway. And we don't have to go tell those things to somebody else. But that's what I was taught to believe, that I had to tell these things to someone else before I could be forgiven. And once I told Him all my sins, then He kind of added them up, I don't know, with some kind of calculator, who knows. And then He decided how many Our Fathers and how many Hail Marys I had to say. And that was my penance. And so because I never told Him everything I did wrong, I never was really forgiven for everything. Because He, you know, wasn't truthful with Him. More guilt. So, when I was around 10 years old, I overheard my parents talking about getting a divorce. And they fought a lot through my childhood. But it was scary to overhear them. They didn't know I was there. I wasn't trying to eavesdrop. It just happened. And as they talked about it, they decided they'd wait a year. And so, oh goody. I got to wait a year and see if the ball was really going to drop. But of course, you don't say anything because if you say it, then it'll come true. So I didn't dare ask them about that. And they decided to wait a year because my dad was doing a special job for NASA. This was 1968. Anybody remember what happened in 1969? Or, well, you probably don't remember, but do you know? We went to the moon in 1969, and so my dad had gotten transferred to Hawaii for a year to work on that project. So we lived in Hawaii, and I waited for him to get divorced. And when we got back home, they still were together, but eventually they did get divorced. I think I was about 12. And then we were excommunicated from the Catholic Church, our whole family, because my parents got divorced. I don't know if they do that anymore, but they did then. And we were taught as Catholics to believe that if you weren't Catholic, you were going to go to hell. And so we weren't allowed to be Catholic anymore, so we were all going to go to hell. So we were rejects by God. And that was basically, I just gave up. You know, why believe in a God that didn't believe in me anyway, you know? And so we didn't go to church anymore. We weren't allowed to. And life just kind of went on after that. And I graduated from high school, and I moved away from home, and I started working in television production in Hollywood. And that's a whole other story, too. But anyway, over the next few years, my mom began searching for a church. And one day, a pastor and his wife happened to knock on her door. They were offering Bible studies in the neighborhood. And she was excited about that. And it was an Adventist pastor. And coincidentally, my sister had just started dating this guy. She was 19, I guess, or 20 maybe. And he just happened to be the son of this pastor. It was just the weirdest thing because he was out of the church at the time. He wasn't even going to church. So my mom started studying. My sister started studying. They both got baptized. My sister got engaged to this guy. He got rebaptized. And she invited me to their wedding. And I was in Hollywood. And I was too busy working on some ridiculous game show or something. So my boss said, oh, no, you can't leave. We're editing this show, and you can't leave. And so I probably don't need to tell you how stupid television production is to think that I would miss my own sister's wedding. You know, it was a fun career, I'll admit that, but they think their show is more important than anything else, and you have no personal life, and that's why I stopped doing it. Anyway, I wasn't there for her wedding. When my mom told me she was going to become a Seventh-day Adventist, I thought, oh, she's just gone off the deep end. Saturday was for shopping. Saturday was for cleaning your house. Saturday was for sleeping in. And Sunday was the day you went to church. So I just thought that was odd. And she started sending me stuff. You know how moms do. She sent me tracts, and she sent me tapes, and she sent me books. And in the Catholic Church, everything is kind of a talisman. You wear these medals, and you wear these scapulars, and you have your rosary. And they're good luck charms. And they have power. And so I was superstitious, so I never threw any of this stuff away, but I never read any of it either. Eventually, though, I agreed to take Bible studies from my mom. I didn't want to go to a church. I didn't want to have anything to do with the church for obvious reasons. So I started taking Bible studies, and that's when I learned the truth about the state of the dead, which my husband says is Wisconsin, but that's not true. The state of the dead is not Wisconsin. I mentioned to you, I never understood how heaven could be happy if the people there had to be floating around watching us. I mean, what kind of heaven is that? So they go up there and they have to watch us suffer. And God's saying, now you better be happy. You're here in heaven. You have to be happy. You know, and then what kind of God lets a mother die and have her child have to be without her? And then she gets to go to heaven and watch them grow up without her. Oh, yippee. That really sounds like heaven for me to be in heaven and watch Ronnie be without me. I didn't want to be there. You know, and what kind of God lets a child die and then the child has to go to either limbo or heaven or purgatory and watch their mother grieve over them? So to find out that people just sleep when they die was a real blessing to me. And when I found out my baby brother is just sleeping in Jesus, that was a huge relief. And that, you know, there's no dead relatives or grandparents watching me and seeing what I'm doing. And that I don't have to confess my sins to a priest, only to God. I confess my mistakes to my friends when I'm, you know, something happens and I'm unkind, or to my family. But my secret sins I take to God, and that's all I have to do. The truth about my own death and salvation was a truth that really set me free. And it made me free from that misunderstanding that I had felt about God. In Desire of Ages, Ellen White says on page 22, the earth was dark through misapprehension or misunderstanding of God. That the gloomy shadows might be lightened, that the world might be brought back to God, Satan's deceptive power was to be broken. And that's why Jesus came. And I found those truths in the Bible. And I encourage you to do the same. His power over me was broken when I learned the truth about death, the Sabbath, and many other things. But the truth about death was what won me over to a good-hearted God that doesn't want to see anyone suffer. And as soon as we're ready to go, he takes us off this old world, whether it's Mrs. Kravig today or us when he comes. And then we can all be together again. Thank you.